Let me talk for a minute about taking the road less traveled. Let me talk about maybe trying to sneak in through the side entrance or something like that. That, I think, is a phenomenal allegory from my guest this morning. I have got Andrew Rice. He is a Democratic candidate for Connecticut's 3rd Congressional District, which is currently held by Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro. DeLauro has held this seat since 1991. She is an established, some would call establishment, Democrat. And Andrew, you are seeking to unseat her in this coming election.
I sure am.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I made that road less traveled comment because when you are my first guest who ever actually found the side entrance to this building, which I found impressive, and I found a solid metaphor, a solid allegory.
I don't like going to the main entrance. I like taking my own roads.
See, I like that though, and that's part. So now let's talk about your own roads. You call yourself a Democratic populist.
Yes,
populist being a very specific term there. What's the distinction?
So the Democratic establishment, I feel like, is too corporate leaning and they are too into corporate needs, whereas a populist is someone that is going to take a message that will be more popular among working class people and middle class people and people who are struggling. And right now I feel that the Democratic Party has ventured too far away from what originally made them great, such as the FDR values of the New Deal or the Great Society under LBJ, and as we've continued along, we've deferred more and more to corporate interests, and so populism is really bringing it back to the population and their needs, and not just the corporate needs.
Where does that fit in terms of those who might identify, and you know, honestly, on the left, we may have a little bit of a naming problem, because there's liberal,
liberal,
there's leftist, there's progressive, exactly, that was the one. Where would someone who might identify or might not be familiar with that term find themselves?
I would consider myself a leftist.
Okay.
Leftism.
Oh, but I mean, for your own supporters, though, where might they find themselves, like, as a, you know, as a populist? Like, oh, I'm a leftist. Populist ideals are going to appeal to me. How?
Well, so I've often observed that breakdown in communication happens when you don't have the same definitions for choice words in a conversation.
Sure.
So that question's difficult to answer because any one person might have a different. So there's the connotation and denotation. The connotation of a word. The denotation of the word being the exact dictionary definition.
Yeah.
The connotation being what someone's like emotion is behind that word. So anyone you talk to, they might hear populism and they might think it's right wing because Trump is considered a populist. Right wing populism to me is more of like a nationalistic, like Christian nationalism type thing that focuses on the white race and white identity. Democratic populism or left populism to me is much more driven by the economic needs of people who are working class, middle class, and struggling to get by in the wealthiest nation in the world.
Absolutely. And, you know, on your website, what I saw was your website says that Connecticut needs more affordability and fairness. Now, we know affordability. We know what that means. Everybody here is in the struggle. We all know what it means to need more affordability. How are you defining fairness?
So fairness is a wide range of policy. So certain civil rights.
Yeah.
So women's rights, LGBTQ+ rights, renters' rights, trans rights. Any marginalized group having fair representation and protections under the law. But then also having a police force that keeps the community safe, but is held accountable for poor actions. Fairness in, the mobility of people is a great economic driver. So part of having a fair society is one where we have a scaled, well-integrated public transit system and high-speed rail so that people can move their goods, their services, and their selves so that they do have more opportunity in this economy. And the environment, because if we are going to live in a fair and just society, we need to make sure that our, the generations that come after us have a stable environment to live in. So it is a whole, elder care, child care, things that make life more fair for everyone. And then a lot of that also has to do with militarism and not having so much money put into the military that is being used across the seas to destroy societies, to invade sovereign nations. Because that is, to me, a moral issue for Americans. We are, if we're going to be a nation of democracy and peace, we need to show that, not not have all this military action that is destabilizing sovereign nations, destabilizing the planet and the climate and the environment. So it's a whole mix of policy and the fairness aspect.
No, definitely. And I mean, I think that, you know, a large portion of, I mean, I suppose maybe not a large portion of people, certainly a large portion of Democrats are right there and in tune with that message. But I think, you know, one of the things that I'd imagine your campaign is going to have to overcome, one of the struggles you'll have to overcome, is a lot of people would say, well, you know, Congresswoman DeLauro's doing that, right? She's one of the founding members. I mean, I see the look on your face, and you wouldn't be in this race if you didn't have it, so I respect it. But, like, you know, someone might say, okay, she's one of the founding members of the Congressional Democratic Caucus, Progressive Caucus, right? But where has she fallen short in your estimation, and why is it a time for a change now?
Well, so first of all, there's a website called Government Tracker. And they rate all 435 congresspeople from most progressive to least progressive.
Sure.
She ranks, I think, 120th. So 56% of the Democratic Party is more progressive than Rosa DeLauro. Also, you know, you can call yourself something and doesn't mean anything. You know, a lot of people call themselves Christians, but they hate immigrants, they hate poor people, they hate sick people, in the exact opposite of what Jesus said. So just because you call yourself something doesn't mean you are that. Saying something doesn't mean it. It's what your actions are. And so, you know, if she was really progressive, why does she accept so much corporate donations? In 2024, she took in $1.7 million. 50% of that came from corporations. Only 5% of it came from small dollar donations under $200.
Which is the focus of your campaign, right?
Grassroots those small support, dollar, yes. Yeah, I refuse to take PAC money. I refuse to take corporate money. Yeah. An extra hell no to AIPAC, which she just accepted more money from. Because at the end of the day, I want people... I'm a huge Star Wars fan.
Yeah, I am too.
So in Attack of the Clones,
yes.
Obi-Wan Kenobi says to Anakin, I've often observed that politicians please those that fund their campaigns and are more than happy to forget the niceties of democracy to secure those funds.
Yeah.
And so when you look at someone who takes money from AT&T, L3Harris, General Dynamic, all three of them have contracts with ICE. She refuses to abolish ICE. Is that because that is what she thinks is best for the constituents, or is that what those three corporations are telling her? You know, we have the conglomeration of media under fewer and fewer corporations. She takes money from NextEra. Is she really going to regulate media so that there's not this conglomeration? She takes money from Verizon and AT&T, which is just interesting that you're taking money from two competitors, which just kind of shows that it seems to just be like, you know, as George Carlin said, it's a big club and you ain't in it.
Yeah, right.
And so if she was truly progressive, why does she not support, abolishing ICE? Why does she not support the Restore Trust in Congress Act that would stop insider trading with stock bans, especially after what Mike Johnson said the other day, where we need to, you know, have empathy for these Congress people that are making $174,000.
Yes, and
they
yes.
need that trading so that they can, and then they tell the rest of us that we should be able to live off of $7.25 an hour. I resigned from my job.
I have a question about this, but keep going. Yes, I think you're about to answer it.
So I resigned from my job in October to run for office full time.
I saw the Instagram video.
And I am my savings will end at the end of this month.
Wow.
It was supposed to last through June, but gas prices and everything started skyrocketing.
You made it to May. That's pretty good.
I made it to May.
It's not bad.
I used my life savings and...
Wow.
I'm looking into getting into my 401ks to try and make it over the finish line. And that itself is a privilege because there are a lot of people that don't have life savings. There are a lot of people that don't have 401ks.
And to give a little bit of background, you're a molecular biologist. You know what? I'm sorry. Are you a PhD?
Oh, God. I
wish no. I was okay. Smart. All right. Yeah. I wanted to make sure I wasn't supposed to be calling you doctor this whole time.
No. Oh, no. Okay. I have a master's. So,
very good. Yeah.
You can always call me a master, which yes. you know fits with the Jedi.
Sure. Right. Right. The Jedi thing. I'll stick with Andrew, but thank you.
You can say Andrew. Thank no you. Worries. but yeah. So, you know, she also... you know, she talks a lot about the war in Iran and how it's wrong. I'm like, well, I agree, but the other day, a week or two ago, she was at an event with Jim Himes, another rep from New York, and herself, and they're talking about where you fund, you know, where you put funding is, you know, where your priorities are. Well, she voted in favor of that $1 trillion war budget back in December, the same budget that had a provision that now automatically registers people for the Selective Service Administration or the draft. And it's so you know, we can you don't need to show ID, you don't need to show citizenship, you don't have to show any of these things to be auto registered to, you know, go to war if they if they call for the draft, which hopefully never happens. But we can't do that for voters, we can't do that for voting rights. And so again, she says she's a progressive, but I want you to see how you are actually progressive. You know, she says she's, you know, for the environment and for climate. And I don't know if you saw that disaster of a hearing with Lee Zeldin.
No, I did not.
Oh, God. That is who the Democrats, you know, in this state just chose as their, I should say the Democrat, the establishment chose as their champion. Because I'm not sure if you heard about the convention. But in that, she was just completely unprepared. Lee Zeldin embarrassed her and embarrassed Connecticut in return. And so, you know, if she was a, you know, she was talking to Lee Zeldin about like how he's saying that climate change is a hoax and we need to care about the climate. One of the largest contributors of carbon dioxide is the United States military.
Sure.
And so if you really care about the climate, don't fund the military that is just being used to bomb, you know, bomb Palestine, bomb Iran, blockade Cuba, bomb Venezuela. Because every time we drop these bombs, every time we fly these planes, that's more damage to our environment. Now we're seeing that we might have the worst El Nino ever on record. And it's just like,
yeah,
you're not a progressive if you're not going to truly tackle some of these things. And then the last part is, you know, she always talks about getting health care for everyone. Then why do you not support Medicare for all?
Right. Right. All right. Well, those are all valid points. Despite this, Connecticut Democrats didn't back you last week. You didn't get on the ballot. Now, you were close.
You were
within five votes or was it six?
Six votes.
You were very close. But now you've got the petition going. Tell me about that.
Well, so first of all, I want to recognize that, you know, my team, myself, I've never held elected office. I don't have political experience. We don't have deep connections to community leaders. We don't have deep-seated relationships with anyone in the party, and we don't have a lot of money. And we still got within 1.7% of getting ballot access at convention, which is just, I think, an astonishing achievement for our team that is, you know, a ragtag group of rebels.
Yeah, yeah.
But on top of that, the party establishment did not follow convention rules. They did not have, and the most important ones of those, they did not allow for a roll call vote.
Yeah.
Which, if
we're talking about Robert's rules at this point,
Robert's
right?
rules of order.
There you go.
Yes. Yeah. And in that, and in the established rules for the convention, well, they didn't even adopt a rules package. They didn't appoint a parliamentarian. They didn't follow the agenda. But the two most catastrophic breaches of those rules was the roll call vote. So, you know, Ansonia, how do you vote? Then the chair is supposed to say, you know, two votes for Rosa, two votes for Rice, and so on and so forth. And then at the end of that, once they had the final vote count, there was supposed to be a 10-minute window where delegates could change their vote. Now, a lot of delegates had approached us and said that they are nervous to vote for me because of retaliation, harassment, and pressuring from the DeLauro campaign, from the DTC chairs, from party insiders, such as, you know, Jimmy Tickey. And I'm going to name names because...
Okay.
I'm tired of people not being held accountable. This is democracy. They broke several rules. And I've complained, we've filed a complaint with the Democratic State Central Committee to contest the convention and request a new one. Because if you're not going to follow the rules, you need to be held accountable. And so several delegates said that they were nervous that they would not be a delegate again, that they would lose their position on the DTC, that they would become, some were told that if you vote for Andrew and you want anything from the DTC, do not expect it for years to come. Some people were afraid to lose their jobs. This is bullying. This is Trumpian behavior. And, you know, several people said, is that a good idea to, you know, go against the party or that you're not going to get their support? I'm like, I'm not looking to have a career in politics. I felt an urgency for the moment and decided to give up everything to fight for what I felt wasn't being fought for. I'm going to hold our own accountable, because if we're not willing to stand up to our own, if we're not willing to hold our own accountable, why should voters trust that we're going to hold anyone else accountable? So we are going to push for a second convention. But in the meantime, we are going to get those signatures. We need 3,386. Studies suggest that you should have around 40% more, which would be around 5,000. We're going to go for double, so around 7,000. We have 3 weeks from today to collect all of those. We have about 25 volunteers that are out there collecting signatures. I'm going out there collecting signatures, and we're hoping to get more people, you know, to the cause. Because we've seen from people like Zohra Mamdani that it's not just one person or a small team of people.
Yeah.
Things happen when a large group of people are vested in their future, come out, volunteer, and fight for what they believe in, and, you know, sacrifice a little bit of time and, yeah, risk some, you know, exposure to the public. Going out and asking people for their signature is awkward. It's uncomfortable. But if that's what it takes to fight for democracy, if that's what it takes to fight for a better future, I'm in it. I have 25 people that are there with me.
Sure.
And I'm confident that we'll get people along the way that want to join and see us get on the ballot so that people in this district have a choice. Because at the end of the day, when Democrats talk about, you know, Trump and his SAVE Act or the Supreme Court and the gutting of the Voting Rights Act, and then say that this is voter disenfranchisement, this is voter suppression, and then turn around and do the same exact thing to their own primary voters,
mm-hmm.
they don't have the moral standing to say anything against the Republicans.
What's the signature count at now?
We have 500 confirmed signatures. We're still waiting on, I think, 10 or 11 volunteers to give their numbers. So we're hoping that we have about 1,000 already.
And that's a week's worth of work. This is last Monday that the delegate
yes.
vote happened. So
yes.
that's a week's worth of work. And you got, you know, working on 1,000 already.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There you go.
And that was, you know, when we first started, we only had like 5 or 6 volunteers. So the fact that we were able to ramp up to 26, we're hopeful. We got to have hope. Rebellions are built on hope.
There you go. Rebellions are built on hope. Well done. Sneaking in through the side entrance. That's the theme right there. Andrew Rice, Democratic candidate for Connecticut's 3rd Congressional District. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely.
You're listening
Thanks for
to,
having me.
It's my pleasure. Seriously. You're listening to The Download on The Voice of Connecticut, WICC.